Et Naim, Nikki Yasam Hilo, Nikki Machuptamaidu. Hello, everyone. My name is Hilo, and I'm Machuptamaidu. We acknowledge and are mindful that Chico State stands on lands that were originally occupied by the first people of this area, the Machupta, and we recognize their distinctive spiritual relationship with this land and the waters that run through campus. We are humbled that our campus resides upon sacred lands that have sustained the Machupta people for centuries and continue to do so today.
We are recording. Hello, and welcome to episode 20 of First Generation, One of Many. If you're an avid listener, you may be in shock because you don't hear Teresa introducing it. We decided to switch it up today, and I will be the introducer, if you will. And so again, thanks for listening, and we are excited for our episode today. We have a large panel of people. We have five. It's one of our bigger groups, so it should be an exciting conversation. And just to remind everybody, I don't get to be here alone. And so I'd like to welcome in the amazing Teresa Hernandez. Hey, hi, Teresa.
Hi, how are you?
Today's been a nice day. It was interesting. I had a last minute vet appointment to get my dog looked at, and I was able to at least pick her up. And she's not really my dog per se. Like, she's the family dog, and I'm the last person I think that she wants to go to for some reason. She loves the kids, and she loves my wife, my partner Laura, and the kids. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when I picked her up, she was going crazy, shaking and just whining and just jumped on my lap, and I was like, wow, okay, all right, she does care about me.
At least she's excited to see you. I'm sure the vet was the last place she wanted to be.
Yeah, it was very unexpected, but she's good to go now. Let's see then, to remind everyone, we are First Generation, One of Many. Our mission is to create an archive of discussions with and about first generation student experiences in and out of the classroom. We hope to continue raising awareness and understanding, provide voice for students and alum, as well as present resources for faculty, staff, and students working for and collaborating with first generation students.
Thank you for that, Josh. And as per tradition, we like to start off with a few quotes. And today we have two for you all. So one, thanks to our lovely guests. One of them is, "We open doors so others can walk through them." And that quote is by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, also known as AOC. And also, "Possibility promotes probability." And this was given to us and shared by one of our very own guests, Malcolm J. McElmore. So thank you all for your quotes of the day. Super excited to dive into what that's going to mean through our conversation with the questions that we have lined up for you all. And to get started, so Josh mentioned that we have a really good panel for you all today. And it's my pleasure to introduce the first person, Marvin Herrera. Marvin Herrera is a first-generation college student who is from Southern California, specifically Orange County. His major is social work, and he really enjoys the outdoors during the summer and going to Bear Hole and Salmon Hole when in town. So thanks for joining us today, Marvin.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Yes, Marvin, thanks for being here. And our second guest is Selena Tao. Selena is a fourth-year student currently majoring in pre-social work and double minoring in multicultural gender studies and gender and sexuality studies. She aspires to become a social worker or someone who works with youth from a disadvantaged background. Selena also works as a paraprofessional for the Cross Cultural Leadership Center and is a student liaison for the Asian and Pacific Islander Council at CSU Chico. Selena aspires to create transformational opportunities for students and believes in the potential of its students and empowering them to create the change they wish to see in themselves. Welcome, Selena.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to see you and have you here.
All right. Our next guest on our panel is Liana Mitchell. Liliana is a third-year psychology major with double minor in small business and entrepreneurship and diversity studies. She is from Sacramento, California, born and raised, but loves the slow and steady pace of living in Chico. Some of her favorite things about Chico are all of the amazing trails to walk and hike and also spending time by the river. She is excited to start her last year of undergrad in the fall and hopes to finish incredibly strong. After she graduates, she would like to start working in her career field as a juvenile counselor for high school students and youth that are incarcerated. One thing she appreciates about Chico State is the opportunities that she has received through the staff, faculty, and her peers. It has helped her progress with her goals. So thank you for joining us today, Liliana. It's a pleasure to meet you for the first time, and I'm excited for our listeners to get to know more about you.
Thank you for having me.
Definitely. It's great to see you again, Liliana. And our next guest is Brianna Ellis. Brianna was born and raised in the Chico community, graduating from CSU Chico in 2010 with a degree in social science. After graduating, she moved on to San Diego State University, earning her master's in educational leadership with an emphasis in student affairs. Brianna has worked in a variety of university support programs throughout her career, including transition and orientation programs, tutoring and academic support, leadership and student programming, and works closely with historically underserved populations, guiding students to success throughout their college process. She is currently completing a PhD in education from Oregon State University. Welcome, Brianna.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always great to see you too, again. Go Ducks. I mean, go Beavers.
Beavers. Go Beavs.
Thank you for being here. And we also have our next guest is Malcolm J. McElmore. Malcolm was born in Sacramento and raised in Washington State. He came to Chico as a transfer student and student athlete on the track team. Malcolm graduated from Chico State with a bachelor's degree in recreation administration. He then received his master's of science degree in educational leadership from the University of Rochester before returning to work at Chico State in 2011. Since then, Malcolm has held positions in the Cross-Cultural Leadership Center, Fraternity and Sorority Affairs, and Student Life and Leadership. Additionally, he is currently pursuing his Doctor of Education in Educational Leadership from the University of California, Davis. In his role, Malcolm provides oversight and responsibility for the center's programmatic development, management, and success initiatives. This also includes coordinating the Men of Chico program focused on academic retention of historically underserved men of color. Amazing. Thanks for joining us today, Malcolm.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Yes. So incredibly excited to get to know all of you a little bit more. We have an amazing panel of guests with rich of experience. And so to get started, my first question to you all, and you all can just unmute if you want to answer first or decide amongst yourselves, but how old were you all and when did you decide to go to college? And actually, if we could have each one of our panel members answer this one. So again, how old were you and when did, and why did you decide to go to college? And we'll start off with Liliana, if you're ready. And our topic for today's episode, this episode is going to be a discussion about being a first-generation student, faculty, or staff, and being a person of color. To help us accomplish this, we just introduced our guests. And to get to know a little bit more about that, so Liliana, if you're ready to let us know a little bit about why you decided to go to college.
So I was actually thinking about this question, and I'm not sure how old I was when I decided I wanted to go to college. I just always knew that I wanted to do something, and my parents always told me that I needed to go to school and then go to school after I go to school and then go to school after I finish that school. So it's kind of just been a thing. It wasn't really like a decision. It was more of a like, I'm going to college, and that's just the life I'm gonna have. That's pretty much it. It just kind of fell into my life path, I guess.
Well, maybe then once you started going to college, was there a time where something sort of just clicked for you, or you started to realize, oh, I really do want to do this and I am embracing it? Do you remember some sort of point like that?
Taking my first psychology class. Because I came in as a marine biology major and I took those biology classes and I was like, no, this is not what I want to do. And then I took Psych 101 and it like changed my whole perspective about what I wanted to do in college. And it just made me, it was the first class I was like super, super interested in and actually paid attention and actually read my books the way I was supposed to. And so I think that was the turning point of colleges for me, like college is the route I'm going to continue to take and finish to get to where I want to go.
Good. Thanks for sharing, because I think that's important for some of the listeners who are students, possibly, that they're still trying to find that moment or something that really grabs them and engages them with their learning, yeah, more than just going through the motions.
Yeah. And it doesn't always have to be with like a class. Another like kind of turning point I had was when I met Malcolm, and then starting to work at the Star Center was another turning point that I had of like this is something like I want to do, like I want to work with students and I want to engage with folks and become more knowledgeable myself with like training and just understanding how certain systems work.
Definitely, Malcolm is definitely good at that, connecting with students and getting people to question why they're here, what they're doing, and then really, really thrive and sort of pursue that with vigor, you know? That's really fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Marvin, can you share with us?
Yes. So I've always knew that I wanted to go to college all through high school and middle school. But in the beginning, the whole time my parents spoke to me about college, they spoke to me about our community college. So up to sophomore year, I always had the mentality of, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to my community college. You know, that's college for me. I was always introduced to that college. And up to my junior year, as some of my peers around me were talking about SAT and all these other exams, I decided to look more into other like four-year universities besides college. And that's when I started, you know, exploring the CSU systems, and I decided to go ahead and apply to CSU schools.
Yeah, it's a great thing you did, because I know I'm grateful, and our campus should be grateful, and many people are, that you did come here. The impact you've had and the things you've been able to accomplish has been really wonderful to see over the last few years.
Thank you.
All right, Selena, would you like to share?
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to share. I think I didn't really think about college until I was officially in my senior year of high school. And the reason why is I've always, you know, from parents and everything like that, especially when you're first generation, parents always say, go to college and just go to college, go to school to go to school. And I'm like, I don't want to go to school to go to school. What are you talking about? But I think my world started changing as, you know, you grow older. And so in my senior year of high school, at the very last moment, I realized I want to go to a four-year university and I don't want to go to community college, because I love community colleges, don't get me wrong, but coming in a small town like Oroville, the only community college you have in town is Butte College. And if I were to take that route, I would be back in high school with the same cliques, with the same people, with the same mindset. And so I really challenged myself to move outside of that and to really apply for different colleges. I only ended up applying for two, which was Sac State and Chico State. And I took that big risk of not getting into both. But I got into Chico State, and I come to realize a lot how much I love college, even though college is so difficult, even though sometimes it feels like a scam. But at the end of the day, I really take a step back and say, actually, college isn't a scam. You make it worth your while. You know, you make the experience your experience, and you make that the best experience that you can. And so senior year of high school, y'all, I'm telling you, it will really change your perspectives on college.
Yeah, that's a wonderful message in there, that each person that comes to school needs to kind of do their own thing and kind of build their own journey, right? And have that experience that is very different than other people's. Even though some things may be similar, there's still the aspect of it being very vastly different for each person. All right, next, Malcolm.
All right. I guess my path to college was a little while ago. I believe the reason I even initially thought about college was solely for the reason of running track. And so I didn't get into track until my senior year of high school. And I was like, I want this to continue. And so the coach was like, the only way it's going to continue is if you go to college. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and do it then. And so I applied to Highline Community College is what it was called to it at the time. And, you know, ran track there for 2 years and then kind of took a year off and started working. And then I was like, you know what? I still can run. So I'll apply to a 4-year institution. And so I applied to like 7 schools down in California, got into 6, chose San Francisco, and the May before I was supposed to come down or go down, track coach called me and was like, they're getting rid of the men's program, but let me introduce you to Chico State. and introduced me to, at the time, Coach Freitas, who was the track coach. And he talked to me about Chico. And at the time, Trey Robinson was in admissions and had me speak with him. And I was like, he was like, is this something you want to do? And I was like, well, this Bear Burger tastes really good. So yeah, I came down to Chico and yeah, this is my home now. Chico, the city of Chico or town, however you feel about it, has been the city that I've lived in the longest in my life.
Yeah, and
so, yeah, it's definitely home.
Yeah, and that's another boon that our campus has received from one door being closed, another door being opened. To go back to our quote, and Malcolm has been here for a number of years and done also a number of amazing and great things for colleagues and for students and in the community as well. But for people that may not be familiar with Chico or been to Chico or eaten food in Chico, we want to make sure Malcolm wasn't eating a burger from a bear. It was from a restaurant named Madison Bear Garden. So it was a burger at that restaurant.
Yes. Yes.
All right, Brianna.
Yeah, so my, you know, thoughts around college when I was little was I didn't have any other option. My parents had very high expectations. Malcolm's laughing because he knows my parents. And so that was it. For a variety of reasons. I think there's a saying in the Black community that you have to work twice as hard to get half as far. And so that's some of the expectations that my parents, particularly my dad, had on all of the 3 kids in our family, that from a really young age, and both of my parents were educators, are educators. And so that was the direction, and we really didn't have a lot of deviation from that. And so that's kind of the trajectory I took and my siblings all took as well.
Yeah, I was wondering if you'd say something about that, because our campus, right, and our community also benefited from your dad's work a lot on campus and your mom's around the community as well. And your dad was a great sounding board for me in my process to go to a doctorate program and really talk about the process and the steps and things to do to kind of stay on track and really find a focus of study. So I'm grateful. And he was also the manager of a softball team that I played on for so long. But I think I first met Brianna when she was probably
little.
Oh, maybe 5 or 6 years old, possibly, maybe 7 even. That was maybe how old she was. So it's been a great long relationship. So thank you all for sharing those. And those are all, like I said, different stories, right? Individual, but also some connections we see, some similarities in some of those. And then listeners can hopefully glean from some things from what you all shared. So to get right into the next discussion point, one thing for me, I've been fortunate to work on campus with the Education Opportunity Program and first generation students for 20 years now. And the majority of students that come in as first-generation students have traditionally been underrepresented, students of color, And so I've been able to learn a lot and meet a lot of people, make a lot of different relationships. And one thing that, and that's with students and colleagues, being able to be on campus for so long, that one thing that stands out in working with the diverse group of people is this idea of community and the importance of community. Can you all talk a little bit about the importance of community and the role that it plays in the work you do and how it supports what you do and supports the students you're working with?
So I'll go ahead and jump in. Go
ahead, Malcolm. You got this.
So I think following the same lines as Brianna in terms of in our communities, there's, you know, an adage that it takes a village. And the idea is that, you know, no one person can do it alone. But additionally, making sure that, you know, one person always has someone else to lean on or someone to go to, because of so many factors, mainly within communities of color, having to deal with racism and oppression, making sure that for our students and for our children and for our generations to come after, that they don't feel that they're doing things alone. And so in terms of community, it is always about building community, because we want to make sure that we're not just rising by ourselves, but we're also bringing those behind us and with us. And, you know, I may be one person with my position now in the STAR Center. But if a student needs, you know, help in a way that I am unable to help them, then those are the times that we need to reach out to our village or our community. And I know that, especially for Brianna and I, you know, we've had to build our, you know, we call them in a professional sense, they're professional networks. But, you know, we hang out after work and, you know, we talk about the tired days that we have, and it's the building that sense of community and camaraderie helps us help the students even more. And it helps us connect to people rather than ambiguous departments or kind of a random door that we're sending them to. And so a sense of community always helps our students seamlessly succeed.
Excellent. Do one of the students want to share what it means to you? Because you came into the campus at, you know, that young age of 18 years old, maybe not knowing too many people, or maybe only knowing a few people once you got here. So what has community meant for you, and what is it? What kind of role does it play for you?
I think community is actually really important to me. And one of the biggest factors in communities, especially for students of color, I think is learning from one another. That's something that I constantly had to do, is to learn and unlearn the things that, you know, we've been taught in the institution, to stereotype against other people, to really look down upon other people. And so the process of learning and unlearning was constant in my life. And I found that that's something really big in our communities, is that we learn from one another and we learn how to unlearn from one another, to really have those open conversations with one another and find equal grounds to really understand one another, not just, you know, listen, but really listen to understand. And so I think that's something really important for our communities. And that's Malcolm's kid. Wow. He is so tall now, Malcolm.
I think elaborating a little bit on what Selena said, I think also having that guidance when you're first coming in as, you know, a first year and establishing that community, it goes back to, you know, the we open doors so others can walk through them. You know, having EOP and Malcolm and, you know, other centers and other people opening those doors for myself, and I'm pretty sure with the other students on here, having that door open and, you know, welcoming us into the community and, you know, letting us know of the resources and, like, everything that is available for us on this campus, helped me a lot, you know, as a first year. And it empowered me to be that person for all those coming after me as well.
I have to add in a little plug for Marvin in that one, because so I know now that I know him a little better, I know that he's really passionate about community and supporting his own in his community. So when I was new to, I think Marvin knew of me before I even had my first day at Chico State. And as soon as I had my very first day at Chico State, Marvin reached out to me because we have mutual friends through our fraternities and sorority, his fraternity and my sorority. And he reached out to me right away and said, hey, let's grab a bite. If you need anything, let me know. Like, let's get together. I want you to meet, you know, like some ladies on campus who want to potentially join your sorority. So he definitely played that welcoming part to me coming into Chico State as staff. And I know how essential and crucial that is for first generation students, and rephrasing that into having that same support when first gen students are coming into college in the first place. So that transition that, you know, I didn't have that support, Marvin luckily had that support, and yet he reciprocated that in whatever way he could. And so just a little nugget of knowledge there about Marvin. So thank you for that.
And I like when I think of the sense of community and what I've learned from some of you here today and other people around campus is that there's almost these like two different or varying types of community support that you get, because there's the larger, all the people on campus can be part of your community depending on who you meet and how you meet them and those kind of connections, whether it's through a class or whether through an organization or just randomly meeting someone. There's that sort of bigger community, but then for the identities that we have and the experiences we have, there are those smaller communities that we can then be with people who have similar things we can talk about and they can understand us. And then we can also share or be able to vent or just, you know, and enjoy those moments and times when we're with those smaller communities. And that seems to be an important part for first generation students also as they're navigating through this journey, right, of education for everyone. Did anyone else want to chime in a little bit about the importance of community? Or has that summed up the entirety of community? That's just sums it up right there. We're all done. But if you have anything else you want to share, yeah, definitely.
I definitely do want to say that one thing I love about communities, right, is that they challenge you to be a better version of yourself. And they will always constantly challenge you. And those who are really there for you in the community, they will tell you no when you need to hear no. They will not just, you know, sugarcoat things. They will really challenge you to be your best and to do your best so that you can become a better version of yourself. And so that's one thing I really want to emphasize about like communities, especially for first gen students. You know, I think it's really hard to find that community to really tell you the things that you need to do in order to really succeed and help you find your like options and look at your options. So I would say find your community, you know, on campus. They will challenge you to be the better version of yourself.
Yeah, I love that message because it also gets back to your comment about unlearning things. Because being able to join a new community sometimes means you have to unlearn things you may have or ideas or stereotypes or things you may have about the people that you're meeting. So I love that, your connection in those two messages. All right, Teresa, we're going to move into some other questions. What do you have for us?
Yes. All right. So this next question I want to pose to you all is if you all can share a little bit about your experiences with equity and inclusion on campus. And also if there's an effort that you each are involved in that address diversity, equity, and inclusion that supports students, staff, or faculty of color. What are those efforts that if you are you're currently working towards, or some of those experiences you've had regarding equity and inclusion on campus?
Liliana, do you want to share anything? I know you're all pretty active, but.
Is there any way we can like break that question down into smaller pieces? so that my brain can comprehend?
For sure.
Yeah, we can do, let's see. So let's start off with the first part. If anyone wants to share with your personal experiences with equity and inclusion on campus.
You know, I need to look those words up because I don't know what they mean.
Okay. Then we kind of hear, a lot of talk around it in general of just equity of, are we doing things so people have the same opportunities, but it may mean you get something different to have that opportunity, right? It's equity. So it's not just equality, but we're giving and providing people what they need to be able to find success and move through. And then the inclusion is, are we doing things to help include people based on their different experiences and different identities and different thoughts and beliefs? Are we able to be inclusive for different reasons?
And it's a hard, I think it's a hard question to answer.
Yeah.
Depending on your different experiences. So even if it's something, and I feel too, each individual can have their own personal experience when it comes to the definitions of equity or inclusion. And so it's up to really your definition of what you would define that as. And Marvin, did you want to share something?
I don't want to. Yeah, I think that both Lily and I have, coming in and realizing, that Chico State is predominantly white institution. And luckily, Lily and I, we had EOP during the summer and having that, some connections on campus. But when it came to, working together and getting hired at the same time for a center that was barely getting established, we learned a lot about, diversity, inclusion when it came to programming. And, coming up with programs that included everyone from diverse backgrounds and wouldn't want to leave anyone behind. We collaborated and even brainstormed with Malcolm with some programs that, he had already established and had in mind. Lily and I both being part of Men of Chico and Women of Excellence really did open, our eyes and seeing that, diversity is such a big thing and a beautiful thing on our campus. Although a lot of students, really do struggle at first, with finding that diversity and that inclusion. I think that, when Lily and I both being paraprofessionals, we really did, explore a little bit more on that.
Yeah, I think for a lot of our students, and thinking back to my student years, is that they do diversity, equity, and inclusion work many times through their jobs on campus, but they wouldn't necessarily define it as that. They're just doing their job. And so, when they're doing programs that are focused on first generation students, they're not thinking necessarily I'm doing equity work. When they are doing, like Selena's at the CCLC, when they are doing a diversity summit, they're not necessarily thinking about inclusion or diversity right away. They're just, I like this feeling of doing this work, and this is the work that I'm doing. And so many a times it's the professionals who put the titles and the categories on the things. But I think many of our students are in the work and of the work. And but to them, it's just they're doing the things that they care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I feel that there are programs that are geared towards equity and inclusion and diversity and kind of maximizing all of that. But then I feel as institutions overall, you would have to really restructure higher education from the ground up, like completely dismantle and rebuild it for it to involve equity for students, for it to involve inclusion of all of our students. And I feel because of that, there's programs that you see that people are passionate for because they see there's lack of support and access in regards to that. So we have different programs around higher ed that are specifically geared towards helping the specific target of students. And exactly like Malcolm was saying, there's things that you all are doing as staff and students in your programming that are directly geared towards supporting students in those specific sectors without really even knowing, because for you all, you're just, I'm helping these students out, or I'm doing this programming for my community. And so, but essentially you are doing inclusive work. You are doing work geared towards equity. And that's, and it speaks volumes, I believe, of those who are doing it that really, you know, having those terms in mind, because you're doing out of the greater good for your community, for your peers.
Yeah. And I think to, as an example of that, you know, Lily works with our Women of Excellence, which focuses on women of color at Chico State. And then she is also working on a program called Shades of Nature, which focuses on how people of color connect to the outdoors and to nature, and looking at mental health and how to really take care of yourself and how outdoors is a part of that. And so, you know, as she had said before, she's like, I don't really know if I do these things, but that's an example that she's in it and she loves it, correct?
it's not just for show, it's real.
Yeah, but they don't necessarily put the same titles on it that we would, that we do.
I think it was hard for me to answer because, like Malcolm was saying, like, I don't see it as that, just because like that's how it's always been for me. Like it's always been every community or group or organization I've been a part of has been diverse and has been inclusive of everyone that was involved in trying to get more folks involved. And so I never realized it to be that, because I just see it as a whole bunch of people who care about one or have like one common denominator that connects all of us together.
Brianna, that's community.
Brianna, were you going to add something?
Oh, I was just going to mention that I think we kind of touched on it already, but as faculty and staff, we have language that we use that we don't always do a good job of explaining what that means to students. And so I think that there's just a disconnect, and we know that students are doing this work, but we always aren't, it's not, we always haven't done the best job of providing the bigger picture for our students.
And yeah, that's an excellent point. It's evident obviously in our discussion here, but I think in other discussions I've had with faculty and staff in the programming or curriculum building, and not necessarily telling students, okay, here's Bloom's taxonomy, the stages you go through of learning, but they're just trying to get you to learn stuff. And if students don't get to see like, oh, these steps are happening and these steps are here for me to do, then it's sort of, oh, we didn't really help the student understand those things. You know, so there's so many different frameworks and different words and definitions that are being used. That's an excellent point of how are we expanding on that in ways that students then so, oh, this is happening. Like, we know it's part of our campus initiative, right? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so how is that message getting to students a little bit better for them to hear? All right. So again, unfortunately, we are running out of time. This is a discussion that could have 2, 3, 4, 5 parts, right? There are podcasts just on this discussion topic. So we are going to wrap up ours with the recommendation section. And at the time where we can share something for listeners to have and go and use, could be personal, could be for professional growth, it could be for both. But what do we have today for recommendations, Lily?
So my recommendation is to travel and take time to explore new places. I didn't do a lot of that growing up. And then once I got to Chico and I had my own money to do whatever I wanted to do, I started traveling and realized that there's a lot more to life than Sacramento and Chico. And it helped me like grow personally to like just see how other people live and just the different things that are going on in the world that are outside of what I'm dealing with. So that would be my number one recommendation, is to travel as much as you can and as often as you can.
Oh, definitely. It is a great, great experience.
Also, you don't always have to have money to travel. You, like when I say travel, you could literally go on a hike. You can go sit at a park. Sometimes all you need is snacks and gas, and you can take a day trip to the beach, and that could be your travel.
Great. Thank you. All right. Who's up next with your recommendation?
My recommendation would be to take care of your mental health. As first-generation students or as students overall and even faculty members, you know, we always go through a lot, either back home or, you know, even with academics. And I think, you know, mental health is really important. We have the counseling center on campus. So that would be my recommendation, you know, just to check in with someone and just, you know, maybe you don't think you need it, but at the end of the day, you realize that it was best.
It's a wonderful point for everything we've been doing the last 10 months. Prior to that, mental health was important, but it wasn't a central discussion point, obviously. And also another discussion on campus that I've been a part of in a few different meetings and settings is the mental taxation for students of color and colleagues of color being asked to do so many different things and represent and be part of this committee and that committee. And so there's that now has been piling up over the last 10 months as well. So it's definitely a great message. Thank you, Marvin. Selena.
One recommendation I would say is challenge yourself to be uncomfortable, to explore, and to really reach out for help. And I know that for a lot of students of color, reaching out for help is usually the last thing that we do. We carry this burden on our shoulders that we have to do everything by ourselves in order to prove our worth, in order to have a spot in, you know, a PWI, predominantly white institution. But I want to echo to students that you don't have to do that. Please reach out for help. Know that you're not alone in your journey. And something I really recommend for students of color, especially first generation students to look into, is intersectionality. You know, really understand who you are as a person, really diving in deep to where you stand within the institution and how you can combat it is something highly valuable. And so go out there and connect with other people, even pro staff like Malcolm and Brianna.
But yes, and we've talked about that on the show a number of times in previous episodes. And for this episode, we will have, again, all these recommendations in the show notes, and Selena provided us with one of the YouTube videos that she appreciates on the topic, so that will be there for sure. All right, Malcolm.
So I provided the link for one of the podcast episodes for Revisionist History. Specifically, that one has to do with desegregation of the South and kind of why it didn't work. And so I put that as a kind of as a resource because it's important, especially for students of color, to really question why things are the way they are. And, you know, to really dive into why some things have not worked and the thought process that has gone behind that. And especially in dealing with diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's always important to understand how people define the problem because that influences how they define the solution. And so there's a number of episodes on there and different topics, and you know, each one brings up a unique way of looking at things, and it's important to kind of have that critical lens on life as we grow older.
Yeah, that episode you put out there, you shared with us, has an excellent point. They're talking about what didn't work was the, you know, trying to desegregate, but then there weren't enough teachers, right? Predominantly white teachers as part of the problem in trying to integrate and change education. So there wasn't that foresight or the right, not even foresight, but really in the times, there just wasn't teachers. There weren't teachers who could connect with students who were students of color, especially Black students in the South during the time, right? So that episode is excellent about education specifically too.
Yeah, and it focused on, I think the one of the key points, because there were many, of that episode was that desegregation was seen as something that helped Black students and not necessarily seen as something to help all students. Right. And that influenced, the episode goes to how that influenced the processes that they went through to desegregate, which was not true desegregation.
Right. Thank you. Okay, Brianna.
Yeah, so I recently discovered this podcast and I'm sending it to all my students who are around to listen. It's called Therapy for Black Girls, and there's nearly 200 episodes. It's by run by Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, who is a licensed psychologist, and she has almost 200 episodes around everything from managing pandemic anxiety to, you know, intimate partner violence, heavy stuff, all the way to self-care, self-compassion. I sent Lily in the chat one on relationships with nature, since she was running a program related to that. So there's a whole host of different topics, all the way to as light as episodes are looking at Insecure, the HBO show, looking at episodes of Insecure from the lens of relationships and mental health. So really accessible for anybody, but especially a lot of our students. So I am throwing that in as a recommendation.
Great, thank you. And I have just one recommendation for today. It was a gift I received back around the holiday season, and it's Emmanuel Acho's book, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. And so I recommend that. There's a website you can go to. There's a plethora of videos he has out there as well. To engage with conversations and how to approach and topic points and all sorts of things. So that's a wonderful resource from Emmanuel Acho. And Teresa, take us out. What is your recommendation?
Hello, yes. So my recommendation is a podcast. It's called Con Todo Brown Love. So the host is Dasha Polanco. So some of you may know her from the show Orange is the New Black. As well as other parts that she's had. So she's the host of this podcast, and I really like it because she really, what she does is every week she has a different guest on her show, and they're all part of the Latinx community within Hollywood. So producers, actors, things like that. And what they talk about are Latinx, are issues in the Latinx community, and also how, what they're doing in terms of being able to open doors for others in the Latinx community to go into that Hollywood scene, if that's what they're trying to do, or anything that they're doing within their own communities. And she also brings light to, they talk about things like machismo, Afro-Latinidad, self-care, and, you know, down to things as like in comedy. So I, one of her main things is bringing attention to the Afro-Latinx community. And so talking about that, which is amazing, and she's hilarious. So that's my recommendation for you all. And with that, I just want to say lastly, thank you to our panel of guests. Thanks to my host, Josh, again, for being here today and having yet another amazing episode for all our listeners to tune into, along with amazing resources for them to be able to tap into and to access. So thank you for being here. Thanks for your time. And we hope to see you soon.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Bye.